listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. This is episode 165. Today, Dave and I are going to be talking about converting high-dollar SaaS customers. Dave, how are you doing this week?
I am doing great. How are you?
I am doing good. We're starting off with a bit of an announcement, I think, from our friend Charles Perry over at Release Notes. So kind of friend of the show. And they are putting on a conference coming up here October 3rd through 5th down in Quintana Roo, Mexico, so just north of Cancun. So the Release Notes Conference, Dave, is kind of a smaller version of something like MicroConf, just kind of a destination conference for folks like ourselves that are into kind of building profitable remote independent businesses. Charles and his co-host, Joe, for the podcast are the organizer of this. So it's really interesting, Dave, I think, for someone to grow an event out of a podcast like this. Reminds me of MicroConf a lot, but these guys are putting on the conference in Mexico for the first time this year, and we just wanted to give them a shout out for this, and they are doing something very special just for our listeners, right?
That is correct. Yes, we have a couple of tickets to give away, and we will announce how we're going to collect the emails to figure that out a little bit later. But a little more about the conference, I think, first. So for those of you that might be familiar with a smaller conference like Cabo Press, this one, Release Notes, kind of is a sweet spot between a Big Snow Tiny Conf, MicroConf, and a Cabo Press. So you got the tropical setting, that's like Cabo Press. You're still doing the smaller side of things, so that's Big Snow, but it's like a Cabo Press size. So they're looking for 50 to 75 tickets for attendees that are going to be there. So it's not going to be huge, but they are going to have opportunities where people can do meals together and form relationships and talk business. And then they've got a great, fantastic list of speakers, of which we've got an advance on. And I will share just a couple of those that are on here. So Patrick Campbell, who we've had on the show in the past from ProfitWell, will be there. Natalie Nagel, CEO and co-founder of WildBit, will also be there and doing some discussion. And Liana Patch from Punchline Conversion Copywriting will also be there. There's also a bunch of others, but we will announce those on future shows. The full lineup is going to be announced on April 1st when the tickets officially go on sale. But we will have a couple to give away, like I just said a few minutes ago, and we'll have some more details on that shortly.
Yep. So for folks who kind of want to learn more about, you know, the podcast and the conference, you can go over to releasenotes.tv to learn more. And if you are interested in registering in the drawing to win a free ticket, you can go to releasenotes.tv/rogue and just drop your email in there, and they'll be picking the winners of that here in a couple weeks. So like Dave said, we'll be talking a bit more about the conference in the next episode probably, and there's a handful more really cool speakers that are going to be coming. I'm very jealous that I'm not able to go, but it's unfortunately just a long way to go. I am going to see Charles and Joe at FemtoConf in May here, so that's cool that we'll be able to hang out then. But I think for someone, Dave, I think you hit it right on point. This is kind of a triangulation of something like Big Snow Tiny Conf and MicroConf and something like Tropical SaaS or Cabo Press, where it's in a really cool tropical location. They're staying at it like they're doing an all-inclusive resort, I think, this year. So it's like the ticket and the hotel and the food and the booze and all that kind of stuff is all included. So it sounds like a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, it looks really great. And definitely go to releasenotes.tv/rogue to sign up for that drawing.
Yep. So Dave, what's new in the business, man?
Well, still pounding through the integration hassles. We've gotten most of the engineering stuff we need on. So we have 5 integrations pending. 2 of them are done now, which is great. So Yay. Easy Digital Downloads and WooCommerce. I have the plugins. Now I need to submit it into the repository. That's a path that I know very well. So it's really just me finishing that out, and not a big deal. Probably a couple of weeks before they're live. But in the meantime, it's not like I can't have people use it or sign up for it. I can just hand them the thing manually. It's just not in the repo. So that's not a big deal there. Then we've got an integration with Carthook. That's really close. There's some engineering stuff that they're working on right now. We should have that done here in 2, maybe 3 weeks. And then we've got a couple of other integrations where there's just no specific date on the other side's list as to when we're going to get in their stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's not what I wanted here.
We did all this work and now you're just making us sit here, huh?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it would be different if, for example, they were in a hungrier growth phase and they were looking to grow from acquisition. But I mean, the equation is very much flipped. I'm looking to grow from their side and they get something here, but it's not something that they don't already have. It's not like there aren't other options available out there that people can use. So in that sense, you know, it's a little bit of a bummer that the urgency is not equal on both sides, but it is what it is. So, you know, I'm trying to find other ways to push that and get it through. But so far, you know, we're at where we're at. And I've heard some very disappointing date possibilities on those two. And I won't name and shame those companies, but they're talking like Q2, Q3.
And the delay is just them approving it, or they have things to integrate on their end, or what's the hold up there?
There is very little work that they need to do to make this happen, but I think it has to do with engineering priorities. So they're probably working on some stuff that's important to them and, you know, super deep feature work or whatever, or maybe they just don't have cycles in their QA to go through and test this thing. But based on that, they're like, yeah, this is when we can realistically get to it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
That sucks.
So yeah, this is the dark side of integration. Unless your priorities are aligned, you don't necessarily get the urgency that you want out of it on your side.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've done a bit of integration with both Castos and with SalesCamp. And I have to say, overall, they've both been really positive in terms of, you know, definitely like from a feature perspective for our users, but also like a marketing perspective and just kind of like a bit of co-promotion that we're doing. And we're looking at doing more of it mainly for that reason, mainly just for getting our, you know, eyeballs from customers in another, you know, part of the podcasting world, say, onto kind of our stuff. I think there's some stuff that makes an app more powerful and more user-friendly and stuff, but I think some of it is more so just marketing, being in the Shopify app store, being in the, you know, WooCommerce extension platform or whatever it is really like a really cool marketing opportunity, and it adds functionality and stuff too. But we maybe should do an episode in the future about like how to, from what we're learning, how to market through integrations. So I know that's kind of like a big part of it is the marketing opportunity that offers.
Yeah.
If you're aligned, you know?
Yeah. The hard part about integrations is never the technical bit. It's making sure that you're aligned with the other group so that both sides are getting, I won't say an equal benefit, because I think it's pretty rare that you're going to see equal benefits on both sides, but there should be solid benefits on both sides.
Yeah.
And if there aren't solid benefits on both sides, that's when I think integrations fall apart and there's a massive lack of interest on one side or the other based on that alone most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and something that we've seen, and I think this is just with integrations in general, is that it creates a fair amount of like support burden because, you know, you control your app and everything about it, but then you go to integrate with somebody else and then there's, you know, did you verify this? And is your account there compatible with what we're trying to do here? And so I think when you look at integrations, you have to really understand, you know, how your stuff works, how their stuff should work, and how the API between the two, you know, is going to kind of create that experience for your users. Because, I mean, we see, you know, like with Castos, we integrate with Shopify. Or with Spotify, I mean, there are questions every day about Spotify. Spotify didn't pick this up. Spotify, you know, I'm moving from a different provider. How do I move my Spotify show over? Just because it's different than all the RSS feed based stuff that we do in podcasting. So I don't know, something to be for everyone who's integrating out there, something to be kind of careful of, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. How about you? What are you up to?
Yeah, man. So kind of following up on our discussion from, I guess, last episode with our feedback hub. So we launched feedback.castos.com where we're, you know, creating kind of a portal for users to go in and both plug-in users and Castos hosting customers to kind of give us feedback. We've gotten, I think, like a lot of input and discussion around features that people are requesting. And it's cool. I mean, it's already kind of directing our pipeline, our development pipeline for like the near future. So that's really cool. So, you know, thinking about how we can do more of that and encourage more of that through like our onboarding email series and stuff like that. So that has been cool. And really starting to just look at some more ways that we can allow our customers to monetize podcasts on the Castos side. We're looking at two different ways to let customers do that. So I will be intentionally vague about that until we have some more, you know, concrete things going on. But we are definitely in motion with both of those at the same time. And I think that for a lot of podcasts, Dave, and maybe including ours, you can kind of pick and choose one or both or either of these kind of strategies to say, like, you know, I want to make a little bit of money and I want to have complete control over, you know, what goes on with my podcast and not kind of sell out and stuff. So that's kind of the theme that we're going after, and threading that needle is pretty tough. I think, you know, a lot of the criticism of monetization of podcasts is that the podcasters sell out when they monetize. And so we're trying very hard to make it easy for customers to monetize their podcast without looking like a sleazebag. So stay tuned there.
That's exciting. Yes. Sleazebags are bad.
Yep.
I think we can all agree on that.
Yep.
Yeah, with the overlap of just podcast sponsorships in general, I've noticed from other podcasts that I've seen, they're very hit or miss. You know, the sponsorship either sort of dovetails very nicely into the episode. Like, I noticed that Kurt Elster does this pretty well with the Unofficial Shopify podcast, but he has a lot of very specific sponsors that are very relevant to his listeners.
Yeah.
And then there's like the ones where they're getting QuickBooks to sponsor their podcast. And you're like, well, is that really the best thing for, you know, an automotive podcast or I don't remember which specific one that I had, but when I heard the ad on the podcast, I was like, really?
Yep.
Really? That's what you want to advertise here? I mean, they were obviously excited to give them their money, and who knows if there was any return on that, but yeah, there's definitely, and when I think you get that disconnect, that's where the sleaze factor goes up.
Yeah. No, and I mean, we work so hard. You and I work so hard for the people listening to this podcast to say, Dave and Craig are talking to me and they know what I'm talking about and going through, and everything we have on the podcast, you know, talking about release notes, that's really in line with like what we are and what we're doing. You know, if we had someone approach us and say, hey, you know, can you guys talk about my whatever book launch, we would tell them, you know, it's a pound sand because that's not necessarily in line with what we're all about. But, and I think sponsorship is the same way. The tough part thing, you know, for us as a hosting platform is to take that feedback and say, everybody needs super personalized advertisers for their podcast. But I mean, so, you know, you have a podcast about keto diets, and you have a podcast about blood transfusions, and you have a podcast about the Green Bay Packers, and you have a podcast about, you know, super right-wing politics, and how,
and then you have the podcast where the Green Bay Packers are doing blood transfusions talking about right-wing politics.
You do. You totally do. I mean, you would be amazed at the things that people podcast about, and some of them are super successful. I mean, they have much, much, much more successful podcasts than we do, Dave, in terms of downloads. And they want and should have advertisers that are really aligned with what they're doing. And so for us, it's a bit, and I'm getting way more into the weeds than I thought we would have wanted to. But for us, it's like, how do we bring advertisers to them in a personalized way in mass, right? Because we can go get 20 advertisers. That's not hard. But how can we go get 5 advertisers for a lot of different types of shows. That's kind of the difficult thing.
Right.
But we're making some good progress already, which is cool. Also to say advertising is only one small part of how you can monetize a podcast. So we have some other super cool things that will be coming down the pike soon that under this show might take advantage of. So we'll see.
Nice. Nice.
Yep. Yep. My other good news is on the sales camp side, we've been talking about like the near death experience of sales camp, and I logged into ProfitWell this past week, and we have almost $300 in MRR. So it is not almost dead. It is fledgling, but it is moving up and to the right, which is cool. So we get a new paying customer a couple times a month, which is pretty cool. And I think we're getting closer to product market fit, just in terms of what we see with new trials coming in and questions they're asking and what we're saying back, and you know, some conversions now. So it's really encouraging to see that thing is looking like it will work out. And so we'll be talking about some more of that kind of as we go too.
Is that the first official sales camp revenue report that I've heard publicly?
There wasn't much to talk about before, but yeah, probably. Yeah, it was.
I have no room to talk. It's not like I'm giving any numbers for my stuff, but congratulations. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's, you know, it's really starting from scratch, which I've not really had to do before. So it's hard to start from scratch, and I won't ever do it again, but but it's profitable now, so we can, you know, spend some more money. So that's cool.
Nice.
Yep.
So today we ran across an article by a gentleman who does web design and SaaS consulting. And he does a lot of landing pages. And when he posted this article, I don't remember whether I got it off of Twitter or Hacker News, but when he posted the article, I was like, oh, you know, these are things that nobody's really talking about and thinking about, or at least if they are, they're sort of like implicit stuff. But he like talked about all of these points out in the open, and I thought this was a great topic for us to discuss today. And it basically is how you convert high ticket SaaS people on landing pages successfully. So where do you want to start on this, Craig?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a pretty lengthy article. He's got 7 or 8 different kind of main points here. I think we'll kind of hop around a little bit, and we'll link to the article in the show notes if folks want to go through and read. It's worth a read all the way through, but if I think for the purpose of the podcast, it's a bit much. But I think we'll kind of bounce around a little bit. And I'll say, I don't have experience with this specifically in SaaS, but kind of the way we approach language and selling with Podcast Motor applies a lot here, I think, because it is a lot higher price than, you know, something like Castos or Sales Camp. Our lowest price tier is $250 a month, all the way up to like $1,000. And you know, his first point is, all of the competitors that you typically look up to suck. So looking at Slack or MailChimp or Intercom or whatever is absolutely the wrong thing you should do when looking at how to build a SaaS landing page for a really high ticket item. And I think that's totally right, because these are all relatively commodities. You know, you can use Intercom or you can use Drift, and you can use MailChimp or you can use Drip or ConvertKit. And we'll talk about like switching and opportunity costs later, but the difference in the cost of those is very small relative to, you know, their competitors.
Right. And the thing that I don't think gets talked about enough is that when you go and look at one of these pages, and I did this exact thing when I was trying to build Support Vine, I was looking at Zendesk, I was looking at Help Scout, I was looking at Groove. And they all kind of had similar sorts of things where they do their competitor analysis thing, and you know, they're basically just trying to hit for keywords. But when you do that, you're basically building your brand awareness on somebody else. And so when you're talking about MailChimp, if you have a discussion amongst our SaaS friends about MailChimp, most people know who MailChimp is. But if you're somebody brand new, they're not going to know who the heck you are. So MailChimp can get away with a lot on a landing page because there's brand awareness there that you can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that he points out. And that's one of the things that I liked about this, that you don't really get that by looking at this. You're like, oh, I'm going to take this great landing page and I'm going to use these exact same elements. That's great. You might have a perfect copy of that landing page, and there's a good chance that that will fail. And this is exactly what I started seeing with SupportVine. I was trying to be Zendesk and I wasn't Zendesk. There's just no way I was going to be Zendesk. You can't get away with the same swagger of a company that has brand recognition.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do some positioning, and you have to educate the buyer, the person who's on your landing page, about why you're better. MailChimp doesn't have to educate somebody about why they're a great service. They have a reputation and almost two decades at this point of doing it. So you're at a massive disadvantage if you're trying to copy somebody like MailChimp or Slack or Intercom.
Yeah. I think it leads right into the next one, which is, the people that you have coming to the site and the messaging and the page design and layout and everything has to be really on point. Again, Dave, you're saying you can't kind of rest on your laurels and the name recognition of being MailChimp or Intercom or something like that. But you also have to, much more so, I think, talk specifically to the right person in the right way, in the right language, about the right problems and your solutions in this kind of thing. Because, I mean, these people are spending thousands of dollars a month on your thing, and you're solving, I think in this case, if you're able to charge $500 a month, you're solving a really big problem. And so you have to talk about it in different language than we're help desk software, or we're podcast hosting, or we're whatever. And so I think the way you talk to people should be different than how these other people talk, than these more commodity players talk to their customers and on the website.
Right. And so we're talking about price points that are not at the $10 a month, but we're talking 100, 500, 1,000, 10,000. Now, obviously, I don't have personal experience at the 1,000, 10,000 a month price point. God, would I love that, but I don't right now. I can say with the WordPress plugins, the way that I ended up getting higher sales with the bundles, which are priced in the $200 and $400 range, in order for me to get that across and have people start, eating it up like candy, I had to make sure that I was saying the right things to the people that were on that landing page. And I probably could be doing better. But in general, a lot of my messaging is targeted at people who are building solutions for other people. So it talks about, you get all of these things for one price, and you get all this extra support, and it's going to save you time because you don't have to buy these individuals. You don't have to make decisions. I'm not making you think, just buy the whole thing. You've got it all. If you need it, it's there for you to use. So all of those messages took time to hone and pinpoint the right person who was looking to get those things. So if you're, we've pitched this before, but I'll pitch it again. And, speaking of podcast sponsorships, we should really start charging Brendan Dunn for every mention of Right Message on our podcast. But I mean, this is where something like Right Message comes into play. So you could have a generic-ish landing page and then have all of these traffic sources that are coming in, and then you customize parts of that landing page based on where they're coming in from. So you could say, hey, is this an agency? Hey, is this a store owner? Hey, is this somebody who runs their own site? Hey, is this, a truck driver? Whatever, whoever your target audience is, it doesn't really matter. If you can identify the source, then you can use something like Right Message to very easily cut down on the amount of work you would have to do. Instead of, like, the way we used to do this was 38 landing pages for 38 different traffic sources for 38 different ways to say the same thing on, to the right person at the right time. So you had to just put it all in there and hard code it. Not so with Right Message. And that's the value of this here. But if you're selling something higher market, you have to know, I am talking to the C-suite of Fortune 500 companies that are in the healthcare sector that have this problem. Like, you've got to be that targeted to nail that kind of messaging and make them want to buy it.
Yep, for sure. You know, the next thing that Pedro talks about is minding the cost. And he lays out three different types of cost. And one is really obvious. It's like the actual cost. It's like, what is this? How much do they have to pay to use your service or whatever? But the two other ones I think are super interesting is the switching cost. So for a customer to come from whatever they're using now, a spreadsheet or another tool or something like that, to you, what is the switching cost and how easy is it for them to get like onboarded and getting value? But the other one that's super interesting is the opportunity cost. And what are they missing out on by not using your service? And I think this gets like, arrogant is maybe the right word, Dave. Like we get with Podcast Motor, especially like with our sales calls, we get pretty arrogant with talking about opportunity cost with our leads and our customers, because that is really like one of our biggest values. Is if customers are not using Podcast Motor for, you know, editing and producing their podcasts, they're probably wasting a ton of time and opportunity cost in doing something else. And so we talk about this a lot and are pretty upfront with it. And for the right people, talking about like the messaging, it really, really resonates. And so I think if you have the right people, then you can talk about things like opportunity cost really strongly, and it will really resonate with people. And then I think that's when you know that you have that perfect alignment.
Yeah. And to go a little bit deeper on this, I think this speaks to the previous point of having that perfect alignment of who you're talking to, because the opportunity costs are going to be different for different target customers. Or they could be. I mean, maybe they aren't, but the reality is, I think if you're talking to the CEO of a healthcare company, that what they're concerned about or what they're missing out on might be distinctly different than somebody who's doing billing in a small medical office. That's vastly different concerns. And I'm not saying that those are on the same level for what they're buying, but that gives you an idea of, you have to understand those concerns, because you know, it's very much harping on the pain points and showing them that your solution fixes those pain points and gives them a reason to switch to you. But the other thing that I wanted to say was, I think the switching cost is it's underrated here.
Yep.
We always say, oh, this is easy to use, it's easy to switch to. We're very flippant about that. The reality, I've never had a reality of switching from service X to service Y, assuming that they're in the same thing, of being seamless and painless.
Nope.
Never, never. So there's always a cost to it. And a smart buyer realizes that there's a cost to it. So I think it kind of sets off a bullshit detector if you're saying, oh, we're totally seamless, we'll transition from X to Y. Mm-hmm. I think that just makes people go, yeah, I don't believe you, I'm just writing you off.
Yeah.
But here's an example of where switching costs can be controlled by you, or at least the messaging of that can be controlled by you to reduce that in the customer's mind. So when ConvertKit was putting that message out there after Drip kind of dropped the messaging ball on their price increase, one of the things that perked up my ears was that Nathan was offering free concierge onboarding to switch. That's huge. I mean, if you have never migrated from an email service to another email service, I don't know that you understand what kind of a pain in the ass that is to rewrite your workflows from one to the other.
Yep.
It's not small. And you did this, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, we did it for Podcast Motor just because our stuff is not that complicated. And we did it, I think they helped us a bit, but we did a lot of it manually. But yeah, it's giant.
Yeah. So if you can offer something out there that makes it very clear, you have a switching cost. We know you have a switching cost. We know it's not small, but you know what? We'll get you there and we'll do it for free.
Yep.
Or we'll do it for a very small price. Like if that thing is normally tens of thousands of dollars, you say, we'll do it for $100 or something like that. Just to say, you got some skin in the game, but we'll get it done. And you know, we'll save you all of this time that you do that. That switching cost is something that I think people ought to be like pounding the desk a little bit more on, because yep, people, if you're trying to be a new guy in a competitive market, you have to basically say, look, I can deal with your switching cost and I'll do it in a way that's almost nothing to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that gets harped on enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, we've been doing this with Castos since the beginning, is offering free migrations, and it gets us a ton of new customers. I mean, I should say a ton of our new customers are migrating from another tool or self-hosting or something like that. And we have it pretty much entirely automated at this point. We were doing it really manually for a long time. And we are looking at doing this for SalesCamp because one of the biggest barriers we have with SalesCamp is you have to integrate two pieces of code into your website, and one of them is into your billing system if you're using Stripe. And so people come in and say, Craig, you know, I don't know how to do this. I'm not a developer. I don't want to hire a developer for this. And so we're evaluating now if that comes up as an objection, can we say, look, we'll do it for you. We just need access to, you know, your website or your code in GitHub or something like that. And just using that as a, you know, removing that objection by taking away the switching cost from the customers. Saw this with, you know, we moved our onboarding emails to user list with Benedict and Jane recently, and they offered to help a lot with us getting set up over there and some of our events and things like that. And it totally sold me, because I was like, you know, to move from drip to user list, I have to go do a bunch of work. And they're like, what if you didn't have to do a bunch of work? And I was like, well, that's great. You know, that solves that problem. So I think, yeah, Dave, you're spot on that, like, this is a barrier for a lot of people. This is like a reason people don't switch. And if you can take that away or talk about how easy it is, then it's a huge selling point. Totally.
Yep.
Especially the stickier the product is. You know, if it's if you're integrating your app into someone else's world, they're not going anywhere, you know?
Right, right. And once you get somebody and they're happy with your service and you're delivering on the ROI, like, recapture is pretty sticky. Once I get somebody there, the average LTV right now, the average lifetime, I should say, is, you know, somewhere in the 18 to 24 month range.
Yeah.
That's pretty long. That's a long damn time in SaaS. So yeah, that's great. But if you're not delivering on that, you're definitely going to have a problem there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The messaging, now we've talked about this in a variety of other flavors, but there's some specifics that he's got here. And of course, he uses an abandoned cart example, which I was like, oh, yeah, you got my attention. All right. but he's specifically talking about, you can't talk about your product. You need to talk about the desired outcome for the user. So again, this is nothing more than talking about the benefits, not the features. But the fact that he talks about it, you know, product versus outcome, this frames it even more in terms of what the customer needs to do. So the example that he gives in here is the previous one that he had was convert carts with text messages, which, you know, snooze, boring, hello. And then the next one that he revamped it with, which shows a clever little graphic of some dude that looks like it has a male icon head chasing after somebody who's got a text message head who's running even faster, says, who else wants to recover 21% of abandoned carts? That really captures your attention. If you're specifically looking at abandoned carts, one of those is, yeah, text messages. Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, maybe I want to do that. But you're like, 21% of my abandoned carts? Yeah, I want to get that. Mm-hmm. That messaging makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I think it's like taking the customer mentally all the way to the finish line is like what the point is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You have to manage their perception, because they're not going to understand what it is your product does. You've literally got to lead them by the nose from the beginning all the way to the end. And, you know, if you're talking about somebody who's in a different niche, you might have to change that message so that it is going after a different person with different benefits on a different landing page. You know, mm-hmm. Each one of them has to be different. You can't just have these generic bland messages. You can have a generic bland message on your homepage, but expect that you're going to get a generic bland conversion rate out of that. You have to really understand who needs to do it. And it's not about, you know, customer persona. Oh, well, we use everybody with pulse. No, you don't. if that's your persona, your persona needs some work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next thing that Pedro talks about is a little bit of what we talked about at the beginning of the show, ironically, is kind of leveraging other people's customers. And this is not like stealing from your competitors directly, but how can you kind of put yourself and your product and your brand in front of other people that are kind of tangentially related. So things like integrations and app stores and things like that. So who already has the ideal customers for your app, and how can you get in front of them in a kind of positive and constructive and in a proper way, right?
Yeah. So a lot of, you know, there's lots of apps that have done this at a lower level, but I think it works even better at a higher level if you know who this is, where deep customer research really comes into play. So when you're talking to your customers, you have to find out not just what they want for your solution and why you're better than all the rest of them. You need to find out what the heck else they're using. You need to know, you know, you might not be doing a CRM system, but knowing what that CRM system is might be extremely valuable to you, because what can you do if everybody's using, if 40% of them are all using the same CRM system, what is a great way to get new customers? You integrate with that CRM system, because now you've taken away an objection if for some reason your SaaS has something to do with a CRM that they might find useful. Mm-hmm. Same thing that we're doing here with Recapture. I know of some specific use cases where certain customers, like there's just no other option for an abandoned cart thing. If you can get in front of them and say, hey, I want to be on your app store, we recover abandoned carts, I can be super useful to your customers. Now I'm putting myself in a position where those customers are going to be more likely to buy my service, but I'm not stealing customers from this other person because my product is not in direct competition with them. But because I know they would be ideal for me and I'm offering a useful service there, that reciprocity makes a big, improves the chance of you actually converting them over to build your growth and to improve that other product as well.
Yep. Yep.
So the question I think you just want to ask yourself is, who already has your ideal customers? Who is your ideal customer? If you can't answer those two things, I think making a landing page is going to be super difficult. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that Pedro talks about is niche stacking. And I love this concept. Like, it should kind of resonate instantly with people. And it is to start in one very specific particular area or part of your market. As you saturate and understand and start to penetrate that market, then you can move out to the next kind of slightly larger concentric circle and the next slightly larger concentric circle. But always kind of having that core niche as the real core of your market and your customer persona and stuff like that. But I think we've talked around this, I think, a couple times, is to try to have generalized, you know, one size fits all messaging for everyone is not going to work. But if you start with something really specific, you can more easily and more with more confidence kind of broaden out from there once you've kind of nailed that initial niche. So I really like this idea. This is kind of like, he has another article about niche stacking here that I'll probably check out, because I think this is a neat way for people to go from the beginning of entry into a market into, you know, a little bit bigger part of the market.
And I think it's a hard one too, because a lot of the time, and I don't know how you are thinking about your markets, but I'm very focused on the market that I'm focused on right now. And I don't always take the time to strategically look and say, well, where do I want to go next? Where should I be expanding so that once I get to here, that gives me an advantage to go into this next place? For me, it's just sort of like, okay, market, 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 done. Oh, hell, where do I go now? Yeah. Oh, yeah, maybe over here. But, you know, if you have sort of a plan, and I would say that, you know, when Rob did Drip originally, that he very much had this plan, trying to establish beachhead with a few key customers and then start working his way out. And he talked about that same sort of stacking strategy in one of his MicroConf talks, which I can't remember which year it was, but he, you know, showed the same kind of concentric circles of going from, you know, close network to friends to loose associations. So, you know, he was just slowly expanding the reach of Drip by going to these newer audiences. But he always had the same strategy, which was start, make it really successful here, and then expand out using a broader reach tactic where we're actually going and talking to a different group of people, but with a slightly similar message to what we had before. So he was never like completely changing everything or going against the totally cold market. It was always expanding and refining based on what he had learned the previous iteration.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the interesting thing about this is it's not just the market and the type of people you talk to, but it's the product too. You know, a product can evolve within a market, or the product can stay the same and the market can change, or some of both. And that's probably, you know, what happens with a really successful companies is the product gets better and helps more different types of people, so that you can kind of play in different markets, and, you know, have a product that charges more and stuff like that. So I think it's both that you should think about, but from a product and from a market and marketing perspective. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a really good article. Dave is our official article procurer these days. So anyone who has suggestions or criticisms of our topics, it's all emails go to Dave.
Yeah, chief scapegoat. I'm always the chief scapegoat.
But no, I mean, I think this is a really good kind of food for thought one. Even if you're not selling like a high product or a high priced SaaS product, even if you're selling, you know, something like more like a $10 commodity type product, you can stand out from your competitors, maybe charge more in the future, or maybe get into markets that you can charge more by kind of following some of these things. So this is a really good article. We'll link up this article from Pedro Cortez in the show notes. And if you have any questions for us, you can shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you've implemented any of these things or seen these work or not work in your business, we'd love to hear from you. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.